It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
What they want is a different kind of law to apply to President Trump than has been applied to all previous presidents, because what they're doing is trying to claim that a statute, not a constitutional power, President Trump is exercising a power under a statute to declare an emergency and then to transfer money from military construction projects to the wall. Congress gave that power to the president, and Congress can always take it back. But what Congress really shouldn't be doing is second-guessing a president's decision that the national emergency is there in the first place.
That's amazing, because that's John Yoo. John was the assistant attorney general under Barack Obama. So he's no conservative. And he is basically laying it out. He said there's nothing unconstitutional about the president of the United States issuing an emergency declaration about the border. Nothing. What's wrong with Congress? What's wrong with the Senate? We are looking at as many as 15 GOP senators. They're going to be voting on Thursday as to whether to uphold the president's emergency declaration. I'm guessing they're feeling the heat. What do you think? Because we're hearing all kinds of things about what's happening at the border. I've told you this week the number of diseases that have been showing up, the amount of hours that the Border Patrol has had to spend on taking people to the hospital. I just had an article this morning, which I don't have time to share with you, about what's happening to women. The sex trafficking is just horrendous. What's happening to women on the border? And, of course, the Me Too movement is silent about that. And girls are having to have pregnancy tests as young as 9 years old. I mean, it's a disaster on our border, and they continue to come. We had 72,000 just last month. And they're saying if we are on track to take in a million people, we have no choice. They're being forced on us every year. They're coming every month. They're coming across the border in droves, and they will continue to do that until someone does something to stop it. I wanted to tell you something that came out yesterday. This is in the Daily Caller, and this is an article I didn't get to, but I want to. Trump has secured funding for more than half of the border wall. I don't think you're going to hear this many other places. 111 miles of new or replacement wall is either being built or is in progress on the southern border. All told, the administration has secured funding for approximately 445 miles of the total 722 miles desired by the Trump administration. The administration, the figure constitutes only 18-foot bollard wire wall fencing or 32-foot levee wall fencing, which is the barrier that the president has emphasized is necessary. Now, this particular accounting of the wall begins fiscal year 2017, in which $341 million was obligated for replacement wall in California, New Mexico, and Texas. The money funds construction for 40 miles of new or replacement wall. 37 miles has been completed or is in progress. $1.375 billion was appropriated in 2018 to build upwards of 82 miles of new or replacement border wall. The approximately now 74 miles out of the 82 of new or replacement wall has been completed or is in progress. In fiscal year 2019, there was this huge fight. We all know about this. The government shut down. The president asked $5.7 billion. The Democrats gave him $1.375 billion, but not to be used for a wall with all these restrictions. So this is why the president declared a national emergency. They're estimating that the wall is costing something like $25 million per mile. And so that's kind of the... one other thing I want to mention, Vice President Pence is kind of issuing a warning against the senators. A vote against the president's emergency declaration is a vote against border security. A vote against the president's emergency declaration is a vote to deny the real humanitarian and security crisis at our southern border. And so the pressure is coming on those. And by the way, I asked you last week, and I will reiterate, they're going to be voting on Thursday. You should call your Republican senators and tell them how don't you dare vote against the president's emergency declaration. Just respectfully, sir, don't do that. Because this is not about the president. It's about our country and its safety. You need to vote that we would build that wall and protect our borders. So that brings me to the president's budget, which was announced yesterday. John Roberts gives a good kind of overview about the portion regarding funding more of the wall. Let's listen.
President Trump sent a massive spending request up to Capitol Hill today, $4.7 trillion, including $1.1 trillion in deficit spending. Of course, the president's budget is just a suggestion, and there were plenty of suggestions from Democrats today on what he can do with it. The ink was barely dry on the new budget before Democrats ripped it as dead on arrival. Their biggest complaint, the president's request for $8.6 billion to complete the border wall.
Federal resources and frontline defenders are overwhelmed at the southern border. And the fiscal year 2020 budget provides sizable funding of an $8.6 billion for full completion of the wall.
The budget asks for $5 billion for the wall in the DHS budget, another $3.6 billion from the defense and military construction budget. Buttressing the request for wall money, new projections from Customs and Border Protection that as many as 58,000 people will be apprehended at the border this month, up to 70,000 in May. But in a statement, Senator Chuck Schumer and House Speaker Nancy Pelosi insisted the president won't get the money, pointing to the recent shutdown, saying, quote, Congress refused to fund his wall and he was forced to admit defeat and reopen the government. The same thing will repeat itself if he tries this again. We hope he learned his lesson.
Yeah, so that's what they keep saying. We hope he learned his lesson. Well, he hasn't learned his lesson. And we have not learned our lesson either. We are demanding that the thing that government does, the president primarily as the commander-in-chief and also the Congress, protect the best interests of the American people, not of foreigners. Their job is to make policy and provide protection for American citizens. That is their main job. It's constitutional. There's nothing, there's not a stretch about that. Daniel Horowitz actually has a piece that I'll just mention this morning. It talks about a Ninth Circuit decision where they are piece by piece granting the rights of citizenship to illegal immigrants. It's just amazing. It is amazing the kind of people that have found their places in position of power in this country while many of us were asleep at the wheel living our lives. They were plotting and planning, and their plotting and planning is paying off. But we have not learned our lesson, and we are not going to go by quietly. And so let me just tell you about the president's budget, because it really is a pretty interesting piece. Russ Vaught is the director of OMB, Office of Management and Budget. You might remember, I'll just mention a personal word about Russ. Russ is an evangelical Christian. And he had a terrible time getting through the confirmation process. He was, I think, in it over a year. As I recall, Corey, Corey Gardner from Colorado had put a hold on this nomination for a very long time because Corey Gardner wanted marijuana laws passed. He didn't want Jeff Sessions to block the free flow of marijuana in Colorado. That's what that was all about. But Russ is really, I want to make this clear. Not every evangelical Christian makes a good government official, and there are varying degrees of what that means in people's lives. But in Russ's case, he's a serious Christian. He's a serious-minded guy, and he's really good at what he does. So he was on with Chris Wallace, I think it was, on a Fox News Sunday. So he's been the point person on this budget. But I want to read you kind of a synopsis of what the budget says, which Russ had a great deal, a big role in drafting this. The budget balances in 15 years. We've got $22 trillion in debt, and this budget would balance our budget in 15 years. It cuts $2.7 trillion out of the budget, 5% cuts to non-defense discretionary spending. And some of that, by the way, let's see if I can find what that, some of that cuts, it's welfare assistance, environmental protection, and foreign aid. More than $1.1 trillion from Medicaid and other health care programs. And I'm sure that's waste. I'm sure that's that big, I'm guessing. They're turning back the handling of Medicare to states in this budget. so that the federal government, you know, it's much better if local authorities control those kinds of things. So that's what those cuts will come from. It some of this won't make any sense unless I stop to explain it, but I'm going to skip ahead. Fully funds completion of 722 miles of border wall with a new $8.6 billion request. Okay, so half of the border wall has already been finished, at least what the president had asked for. It continues rebuilding the military with $750 billion, and the White House is forecasting some good economic growth. Of course, there's a lot of criticism about that, but Russ points out with Chris Wallace on Sunday that this administration has actually been very accurate in its predictions of what they thought growth would be. Once they released all these draconian restrictions on private businesses and let the free market go, jobs have just increased. Everything, the GDP has grown. And so they are expecting this to continue. So they've laid out their projections. And, of course, the budget is expected, lays its results on continued good growth. So that's a really sketchy thing. But that's what the president has in mind. Who could argue with that, really? But, of course, Congress won't pass it. You heard Nancy Pelosi just saying, again, she hopes the president has learned his lesson. Well, Chuck Schumer, I'm channeling Chuck Schumer right now because he says the same thing. How dare the president ask for more money for a wall? What, are we going to have a government shutdown? You just wonder what is going to happen here. The president is just doubling down. He's doubling down. God bless him for that. It's just an amazing thing to me. And meanwhile, Nancy Pelosi is calling for illegal immigrants to have the right to vote. So that's what we're dealing with. That's what we're dealing with. And we might laugh about it, but I'm telling you, they're serious as a heart attack. And if they're allowed to prevail in the elections and take control of government fully, they have the House of Representatives right now, it will be a nightmare. I want to move quickly to, you remember Rashida Tlaib, the day after, maybe the evening, maybe the day after her swearing in as one of the first Muslim females in Congress, this is what she said.
And when your son looks at you and says, "Mama, look, you won," bullies don't win. And I said, "Baby, they don't, because we're going to go in there, we're going to impeach the motherfucker."
Yeah, we're going to go in, we're going to impeach the blank blank. So Nancy Pelosi responded to that on February 28th with something like this.
We have two investigations, the Mueller report that we're all anxiously awaiting. And as was indicated, the one thing I did see widely reported was that the witness said that other issues that he was aware of were under consideration by the Southern District of New York. So let's see what that is. But again, impeachment is a divisive issue in our country. When the facts are known, then we'll make a judgment then.
All right, so that's her February the 20th meeting Nancy Pelosi. And then yesterday, in an interview, or maybe the night before that, she indicated, though, she was now firmly against impeachment. Impeachment would be a very bad idea. We can't do impeachment. Well, Rashida Tlaib responded by saying this.
If we don't hold impeachment proceedings today, start them today and hold him accountable to following the United States Constitution, think about that. This is not going to be the last CEO that runs for president of the United States. This is not going to be the last person that tries to get away with this. And what does that say about the most powerful, most important body of most important position in the world?
Yeah, so that's Rashida Tlaib. I think we have to do this. And Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is joining in. So we'll see what happens with this. Meanwhile, Omar Ilhwan, the triumvirate, the third person of the nightmare caucus in the House, made this statement yesterday in the halls of Congress. It's clip 9. Let's listen.
Do you think that President Obama is the same as President Trump?
Absolutely not. That is silly to even think and equate the two. One is human, the other is
real. Is it true that you just...
Yeah, Omar, did you catch that? Do you know, would you compare President Obama with President Trump? She says, that's silly. One is human and one is not. And I have to tell you, that's very serious, because when they start dehumanizing people, that's when they lay the groundwork for worse things to happen to them. Just saying. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Here's some great news. If you missed the deadline to sign up for health insurance, or more importantly, if you sign up for a plan that you're just not happy with, you still have a choice. It's called MediShare, and MediShare is a Christian healthcare sharing program. It's been around for 25 years. They have more than 400,000 members now around the country. And get this, over the years, MediShare members have shared more than $2 billion of each other's medical bills, so they could help share your needs too. And best of all, you could save a lot of money with MediShare. The typical savings for a family is around $500 a month. Your savings could be more or less, but think about what you could do with that extra money every month. So if you think you're stuck with a high-cost health plan that doesn't have much to offer, think again. You can join MediShare anytime, so call them today and check it out. There's no pressure. They're super easy to talk to. 833-44-BIBLE. That's 833-44-BIBLE. 833-44-BIBLE.
This is Pause to Pray, a moment to stop down from the daily noise of life and pray for our country's leaders.
Today we pray for Lauren Sweat, the Assistant Secretary for OSHA, the Occupational Safety Hazard Administration. Ms. Sweat oversees the mission of OSHA, which is to assure safe and healthy working conditions in the American workplace. Psalm 4:8 reminds us of the safety we find in God's love for us. In peace I will both lie down and sleep. For you alone, O Lord, make me dwell in safety. Right now, with this in mind, let's pray together. Almighty God, we ask you to guide Lauren Sweat as she strives to help keep our workplaces safe. We ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.
Pause to Pray is a service of this station and the Presidential Prayer Team, a nonprofit, nonpartisan ministry dedicated to encouraging prayer for our nation's leaders. To learn more, go to pausetopray.org.
Fox News Commentary with Todd Starnes.
Hello, Americans. It's never a good idea to point a gun at a Trump supporter. That story next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Caitlin Bird. I'm a nursing major and I'm a junior. The School of Nursing here at TMU, it's different than any other, you know, university or college out there. Every time we come into class, no matter which nursing professor it is, we always begin in devotion and prayer, and we become a family. They actually allow the students to get up and do devotion and prayer. We pray with each other and for each other, and that's just what sets us apart from any other school of nursing out there.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
Dateline Overland Park, Kansas, a 14-year-old boy was harassed by a store worker for wearing a Make America Great Again hat. It happened at Vans, a skating board apparel store. The worker cursed out the kid. The boy's mother confronted the guy. He refused to apologize, so she went to his boss. That worker is now unemployed. And in Bowling Green, Kentucky, a guy threatened to kill a couple wearing MAGA hats. Police say James Phillips pulled out a gun in a Sam's Club, told the husband and wife it was a good day for them to die. The Trump supporters stood their ground. The man did not fire the gun. Police quickly intervened. Do you understand what's happening in our country, folks? This is what happens when leftists demonize conservatives, and it's got to stop. I'm Todd Starnes.
That's your Fox News commentary.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
I'm announcing today that we're ending the ban on transgender Americans in the United States military. Effective immediately, transgender Americans may serve openly, and they can no longer be discharged or otherwise separated from the military just for being transgender. Additionally, I have directed that the gender identity of an otherwise qualified individual will not bar them from military service or from any accession program. In taking these steps, we're eliminating policies that can result in transgender members being treated differently from their peers based solely upon their gender identity rather than upon their ability to serve. And we're confirming that going forward, we will apply the same general principles, standards, and procedures to transgender service members as we do to all service members.
Except that wasn't true. That was Secretary of Defense Ash Carter declaring, quite surprisingly, in June of 2016, in the midst of the presidential campaign and right before the election of November 2016, that suddenly the Obama administration was going to allow transgenders to serve in the military, something that had never happened. And you heard Ash Carter promise that nothing would be changing, they'd be treated the very same. Well, that turned out to be absolutely not true. And we found out later when Secretary of Defense Mattis testified that it was revealed that none of the military leaders at the time were consulted about this. This was forced upon them and it caused a great deal of chaos. You know that when President Trump came into office, he issued his own policy saying no transgenders in the military. You also know then right away it went into the courts. Well, what's happened since then? What is the policy? What have the courts done? And what is the latest news on this? I've asked Elaine Donnelly to join me this morning. She's the founder and president of the Center for Military Readiness. And I just have to say that through the years that I've known Elaine and interviewed her since I was in Chicago during the drive time many years ago, she is one of my favorite guests. This is the military, something that's close to her heart, and she has battled like a warrior herself to stop the social engineering that's taken place over the decades there. And she joins us this morning. Good morning, Elaine.
Good morning, Sandy, and thank you for the kind words.
Well, I meant it, and so let's talk about this, Elaine. This is, you live and breathe this, but you know that people don't. And you also know that this is hardly reported. People don't know much about what's going on.
It is one of the most underreported stories going on. But there is something of a social revolution that has been going on in the military for a long time. It is not the conservative institution that many people think. It's been on the cutting edge of social change. And what you heard there from the former Secretary of Defense was a radical change. And, you know, when President Trump came along and he issued some tweets and saying, we're going to change this policy, and everybody freaked out about that, he ordered the Pentagon to take a close look at it, to do a study. The study went on for 6 months. Actually, it already began before the president issued his tweets. And they came out with a nuanced policy that has something in common with what it was that was announced by Ash Carter. And that is, no one will be dismissed from the military just for the status of being transgender. The new policy is based on medical concerns about a psychological condition called gender dysphoria. And it works like this. This is a policy. It allows persons identifying as transgender but without gender dysphoria to serve in their biological gender if they've been stable for 36 months and meet requirements for deployability. That's the nuanced part. It also disqualifies persons with gender dysphoria for military service, but it also allowed a retention, a grandfather clause, if you will, for personnel who identified as transgender and received treatment during the previous administration. They can stay in, but that's a grandfather clause. It's not the permanent policy. So the battle against this began almost immediately with the president's tweets, actually. The tweets were not official policy, but that's what triggered several lawsuits. There are lawsuits that were pending in, and still are, in four different courtrooms across the nation. And what's interesting is the courts of appeals now are starting to say, you know, district judges, you don't have the power to run the military. Article 3 of the Constitution does not give you that power. They have upheld the right of the president to make policy because it affects national security. And the Supreme Court has said that the lower court injunctions to stop Trump's policy, that they were invalid. And as recently as only a few days ago, the last of those four preliminary injunctions fell because of the Supreme Court, and the new policy, the Trump-Mattis policy, is going to begin going into effect as soon as they issue the memorandum, 30 days after that. So President Trump has delivered on this promise, and he has a good chance of prevailing in court. And it will be good for the military and for all the people involved. I think that the military is a very special institution. It should not be involved in social experiments such as this.
So, Elaine, just in terms of what's happening in the courts, this is an Obama appointee. U.S. District Judge George Russell III issued this Thursday, striking down the last four injunctions. But the part that confuses me a little bit is the advocates for the transgender troops are saying that a stipulation in a ruling means one remains in effect. What does that mean? Do you know? That's really
that was before last Friday.
Oh, all right.
The fourth shoe fell just last Friday.
Okay.
And it had to do with whether the individual plaintiffs, whether their status would be different than someone else. This stuff gets complicated. I have followed all the legal battles and briefs back and forth. It really does get complicated. But the only thing you really need to know is because of the Supreme Court ruling that the policy can go forward while the litigation still goes through the courts, there still is litigation, it wasn't thrown out, It means that the policy can go into effect subject to a future court ruling. Now, ultimately, it will likely go to the Supreme Court. You have a D.C. Court of Appeals at the District of Columbia, and then you have the Ninth Circuit. The Ninth Circuit hasn't ruled yet. They're probably going to rule the wrong way. And then both of those courts of appeal decisions will go to the Supreme Court of the United States. That may not happen until next year. But in the meantime, the government, the Department of Justice, did a pretty good job of convincing the Supreme Court that to wait a whole year, I mean, well into this administration, would not be realistic. And so the Supreme Court agreed. And the fourth shoe that fell, the district court level, they really had no choice, because the Supreme Court prevails.
Let's kind of paint a picture of the Ash Carter policy on this, the Obama Ash Carter policy. I have to interject, pardon me, Elaine, I just have to interject this. I say this, I've said it often, but it has to be repeated. When President Obama was a senator in the state of Illinois, I was in Illinois. Of course, I worked on Alan Key's campaign to get him defeated, I quite proudly tell you. And we knew that President Obama, Senator Obama, voted present on almost everything that came across his desk, except the two things that he was absolutely rabid about were any kind of abortion, anything that was pro-abortion, the Born Alive Infant Protection Act. He fought fiercely against. He voted against it twice. Anything that had to do with sexuality, like early graphic sexual information for children in preschool. He was all about that. And he was all about anything that it enhanced or advanced LGBT rights. And so he was very consistent. When he got into the White House, these are the two things that he continued to seem to pique his interest. So under his policy, describe what they set in place, Elaine, to accommodate transgender soldiers who started coming in as of June in 2016.
Well, the administration, Obama's administration, did not do this halfway. They issued 15 different directives that we analyzed in 2017. The basic rule was you will accept the fact or the idea, it's not a fact, that a person can change their sexuality by signing a paper. The designation and the bureaucracy of the military signals that a woman can be a man and a man can be a woman. It meant that doctors and nurses, all the medical personnel, had to go along with this, absolutely no dissent involved, full training, lots of many hours of training. It meant that you could take time off as much as a year to get prepared for the transition. It meant medical subsidies for hormone treatments, which have to continue for life, of course.
I have to interrupt you because I want to make let me just go back and sit on something you just said. They could be paid by the military, but not have to do anything while they were in sort of a transition, right?
Well, if you take time off to think about what it's going to mean, and then you get the hormone treatments, and then after that you get surgery, you're going to be missing from deployability for a long period of time, even if you time it in between deployments. The study that was done by the Pentagon showed that transitioning service members in the Army and the Air Force averaged 167 to 159 days of limited duty, respectively, over a one-year period. And they found that of those service members who sought treatment, 91.5% of them included cross-sex hormones. They visited the doctor 300% times more often than other personnel. 30,000 mental health visits for less than 1,000 active duty service members. Now, these are the kinds of hard facts that the Pentagon put forward and submitted to the Secretary of Defense at the time, James Mattis. And so he made the decision, and he recommended to the president that he endorse the nuanced policy that I mentioned before. And what is the purpose of it? To ensure that the military is ready for whatever is ahead. Combat lethality, mission readiness is the primary consideration. And so far, as I say, although the policy has been challenged in court, at the lower level, it's been put on hold, the Supreme Court has signaled that they will entertain and listen to arguments in favor of this policy. So I think it has a good chance of prevailing, although nobody can guarantee exactly what a future court will do. But I'll tell you, there are a lot of stories, and maybe you saw lately there's been some stories in active media about personnel or people, individuals, even children, who change their minds, who have gone through the kind of transgender treatment that harms them, that hurts their health, that causes all kinds of psychological problems. It doesn't solve those problems. It makes them worse in almost every case. And these stories are heartbreaking. You have a feeling of compassion for people who are confused about their gender identity. These people deserve compassion and competent medical care. But one of the features of the Obama policy was that doctors could only give one type of advice. You couldn't get a second opinion. If you're confused about gender identity, well, here's your hormones, and let's start talking about surgery. It only goes in one way. That's not fair to those people. It's not fair to their families. In many cases, families were screened out of this process. It's been a very painful experience. It's a small number of people, yes, but there are other psychological conditions that also render you non-deployable, that make you ineligible for military service. Certainly, gender dysphoria should not be treated differently than the others, but it's going to be a fight. The administration is going to have to fight this battle through, as they have so far in the courts. They're going to have to choose a new Secretary of Defense who's prepared and ready to continue this fight, and other Pentagon officials who can implement the policy with an even hand. That remains to be seen. I hope it works out. We'll see who gets named to be the next Secretary of Defense.
Let's go back on those. I think the reason I'm going backwards, Elaine, is just to kind of confirm, help people to understand the bullet that we've actually dodged so far. And one thing we're learning, I alluded to this in the opening a little bit, we found out that Ash Carter, even though he assured, now correct me if I'm wrong,
yes,
I believe he assured Congress that military leaders had been consulted,
yes,
that they had done studies, and that everybody was just fine with this new policy. But we found out later that wasn't true.
No, it was not true. The only so-called study that was done was from the RAND Corporation. RAND is a government contractor. They gave the Obama administration what they wanted to hear. The Mattis policy and the Mattis study just ripped apart so much of what was in the RAND report. It was discredited. But that RAND report was not something that was objective, and the military people have since said, and Secretary Mattis attested to this, they were not consulted. They were given no choice. You can look at the directive that was issued by Ash Carter, and you see the decision is already made. You will implement it. And this is why the military is so vulnerable to social engineers, because everyone must follow orders of superior leadership. We have civilian control of the military, and that is what we should have. But when the civilian leadership is way out there on the left side, and when they're pushing social agendas that actually detract from readiness, the military is wide open for abuse, and that's what happened in the 8 years and the latter years of the Obama administration. Fortunately, the Trump administration did not allow the policy of bringing in new people who suffer from gender dysphoria into the military. That policy was suspended by Donald Trump. And it is in court, as I say, and it probably will be upheld. But who knows? The court could go the other way. A new administration could do something different. There's legislation pending in Congress.
Yeah, Elaine.
To codify the Obama policy.
Yeah, let me interrupt.
Everybody needs to watch out for that.
Can you stay with me a few more minutes?
Sure.
Yeah, well, I'd like to talk about that hearing that took place February 28th with the former secretaries at various branches of the military under Obama, what they testified to. And also, I want to kind of present Exhibit A to me of a person who was transgender who's done tremendous harm to national security. That's not to say every transgender person is going to do this. Let me be clear, and I echo Elaine's empathy for people who struggle with this, but we cannot bring them into the military and support terrible decisions that might cost their lives and also the lives of people serving in the military. Be right back right after this. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
What have you done? The voice of your brother's blood is crying to me from the ground. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. According to the World Health Organization, abortion was the leading cause of death worldwide in 2018. As of December 31st, 2018, 41.9 million babies were murdered in the womb. That's more than the 8.2 million people who died from cancer, more than the 5 million who died from smoking, and more than the 1.7 million who died from HIV/AIDS in 2018 globally combined. Thomas Jefferson once said, "I tremble for my country when I reflect that God is just, that his justice cannot sleep forever. Lord, please strengthen us to abolish this wickedness."
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Is your success in life being stolen? Here's Pastor Jeff Shreve.
Unbelief is involved in every single sin. Why did Eve eat the forbidden fruit? Because she believed the devil's lie rather than God's truth. Hey, if you don't believe God, you'll never be a success.
Learn what real success can be like. Join Pastor Jeff Shreve on From His Heart each weeknight at 6 Central here on American Family Radio.
The loss of a child through abortion, miscarriage, or stillbirth affects the emotional health of families. Feelings of anger, sadness, and regret can be overwhelming. There is hope and healing in the aftermath of a reproductive loss. Call the International Helpline at 866-482-LIFE to talk with someone who has been where you are and healed to help others. Your call is confidential. 866-482-LIFE.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. The Constitution prohibits the establishment of religion, that is, picking one Christian denomination and making it the official church of the U.S. An established religion would enjoy special favors that no other faith would enjoy. From my vantage point, Islam has now become the de facto established religion of the U.S. Muslims enjoy protections and privileges that Christians do not. For instance, Pastor Ramin Parsha was in the Mall of America when two Muslim women began asking him questions about his faith. Their quiet conversation was soon busted up by mall security, which arrested the pastor for trespassing. He was kept in detention without water, food, or even access to a restroom for several hours. It took him 7 months to get clear of the criminal charges against him. America's informally established religion looks like it's Islam from here.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. The lights are out in most of Venezuela, and America's last remaining diplomats will be out of there shortly too. A desperate and unsustainable situation is becoming a full-fledged catastrophe. Nicolas Maduro, the communist dictator still illegitimately clinging to power, is blaming the lack of it across his country on cyber warfare by the United States. A more likely explanation is his regime's endemic neglect of the Venezuelan infrastructure, now compounded by efforts to restore power that have resulted in the distribution of unbalanced loads that are causing the destruction of effectively irreplaceable equipment. Our returning diplomats will attest to the resulting collapse of Venezuela's society. Presumably, they will also make clear the humanitarian imperative of a U.S.-backed regional intervention to prevent a hemispheric refugee crisis. Another takeaway: we must protect our own vulnerable grid, lest we face a similar existential threat here. This is Frank Gaffney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
I'm Chelsea Manning, and I approve this message.
We live in trying times. Times of fear. Of suppression. Of hate. We don't need more or better leaders. We need someone willing to fight. We need to stop asking them to give us our rights. They won't support us. They won't compromise. We need to stop expecting that our systems will somehow fix themselves. We need to actually take the reins of power from them. We need to challenge them at every level. We need to fix this. We don't need them anymore. We can do better. We got this.
That's the voice of now Chelsea Manning. Chelsea Manning, you might recall, was Bradley Manning. By the way, that was Chelsea's, one of her campaign commercials she ran for. She ran for Senate in Maryland and was roundly defeated, but that was the very creepy commercial that Chelsea created. And Chelsea, when she was Bradley, was an intelligence officer in the U.S. military and leaked thousands and thousands and thousands of top secret interchanges and email to WikiLeaks, which were published. And from my memory of that, people's lives were actually lost who were embedded in various countries because of that leak. And yet, so in the process of this, Bradley in jail, and by the way, the leaks, as I recall, took place over some sort of a lover's spat. I don't know who the object of love was for Bradley Manning, but there was some sort of a lover's spat, so he leaks this treasure trove of information to WikiLeaks, which is made public. And then Bradley is put in jail and then decides that he wants to be a woman. And so courtesy of our tax dollars, received a complete transformation and became Chelsea. And by all accounts, Chelsea Manning now has been suicidal. She's made that very clear. She actually posted a memo threatening to commit suicide. She took a photo of herself on a rooftop ledge saying, "I'm sorry, I tried, I'm sorry I let you all down," and has been jailed now before refusing to testify in a WikiLeaks case, which is taking place right now. I guess the bottom line is that Chelsea Manning is a mess, and yet Chelsea Manning was a transgender, confused person who served in the American military, and really, to me, exhibit A of the potential tragedies from people who are confused and mentally unstable, because I think that's what transgenderism is. Elaine Donnelly is my guest. She's the founder and president of the Center for Military Readiness. Elaine, do we know any other stories about, because everything's kept so close to the vest, do we know what the effect has been of having transgender soldiers in our military, other than the stats that we talked about?
Wow. I mean, that story, it's very sad, and obviously so many other people were affected because of the psychological problems of this person, Bradley Manning, now Chelsea Manning. There's a reason for that. Secretary Mattis testified when he was questioned by Senator Kirsten Gillibrand last year. Why have we not heard of any problems? He said, well, because there was a rule that, and the military people told him this, that they were prohibited from passing information up the chain of command that had anything to do with transgenders and, I presume, LGBT personnel in general. When you don't have any way to report problems, then the problems apparently don't exist, but they really do exist. This is the culture of the military. Obedience is what we need in the military, obedience to civilian authority. But when that obedience is exploited to advance a social agenda, one that hurts individuals as well as the institution as a whole, that is a serious problem. Yesterday, the Daily Signal, the Heritage Foundation News Service, had an article by a man named Jamie Shoup, S-H-U-P-E, a remarkable story. He was also interviewed by Laura Ingraham on her program last night. This is a very brave individual, and you see there pictures of himself when he was going through this journey to find out, was he a woman? He was told he was, and he was told he was a bi person, that he was not either gender, that he was non-gender or something like that. He had a lot of publicity, New York Times, big celebrity. It was all a sham, he said. And now he's come forward in a very courageous way. I thought Laura Ingraham, looking at him, it was the first time she'd ever talked to someone who had been through this wrenching, emotional, psychological problem of trying to figure out what gender you are, how painful that must be. And he is a courageous person. And I suspect that a lot of other families may look at that story and reconsider. My biggest problem, and it's not in the military yet, is the way that some teachers, some so-called professionals, are telling parents that if their child behaves in a slightly different way, maybe experimenting with gender, that the parent should go along with that, even surgical operations, 11-year-old girls getting double mastectomies. This is so troubling. And many child psychologists are starting to say, wait a minute, this is insane. This is child abuse. And yet, there are those advocates who say, well, the military health system should be extended, it isn't extended yet, to dependents, to young children, so that they too can get hormone treatments and even surgeries at a very young age before they even understand what sexuality means. So, yes, the military is on the cutting edge. It leads the way, in this case, in the wrong direction. But the president's trying to wrest it back into a more solid path and not allow this agenda to take hold in the armed forces.
Yes, and so, and by the way, just an interject, tomorrow I'm going to be talking again, going back to the issue of transgenderism in public schools. It's just becoming worse, and we will be talking about that tomorrow. But I actually really want to know now, you have said, Elaine, and I know it's true, that the president has made great progress on this, and we do expect that the courts will uphold his policies on this. But we are not out of the woods in the sense that we have no assurance that a President Donald Trump or someone like him will have the same kind of passion for this to fight back. Most people don't. He is the anomaly. And so,
that is correct.
And
legislation would make it worse. Forget the court victory if legislation passes in Congress to codify the Obama policy. There's a lot of confusion. Again, when you feel compassion toward people who are transgender and when you want to have a tolerant mind, you really need to look at the facts, the psychological issues, the costs, the wrenching pain that many of these people go through. You really need to think it through. It is not a civil rights issue. It is a medical issue. So the Trump-Mattis policy is based on medical considerations, psychological considerations. It's just like schizophrenia or any other malady that affects a person's psychological health. We cannot allow the military to take on all these issues. That is a bridge way too far. But even in the civilian world, we need to have a more logical approach to this. The medical profession, unfortunately, the American Psychological Association and some of these professional groups, these former military people who showed up on February 27 to say that this current administration is wrong, they said. These three officials, Ray Mabus, Secretary of the Navy, Deborah Lee James, she was in charge of the Air Force, and Eric Fanning, who is openly homosexual, he was the Secretary of the Army under Obama, they showed up to be critical of the Trump-Mattis policy, saying it was dishonest. Actually, they're the ones who are being dishonest, the ones who are being deceptive, the ones who have their names and statements have been filed in these various court cases, litigation. There seems to be a lot of money behind the litigation. Endless lawyers, very expensive lawyers, are at work here. Several organizations, including mine, have been handed subpoenas to try to prove a ridiculous conspiracy theory about the president that he did not act out of concerns of military readiness, only animus motivated the president. There is nothing to back up this theory, but they are hassling and harassing my organization, Heritage Foundation, Family Research Council, in order to prove this phony theory that they think will help them win in court. This is a big campaign, Sandy. This is something that people need to be aware of and need to counter. Talk to your own congressman about it and say, look, you know, there is no need to codify the policy that Trump has revised. It's in the courts. Let the policy go forward. They certainly should not be persuaded to codify bad policy that the president has done his best to reverse.
Let's, just to be clear, Ray Mabus and Deborah Lee James and Eric Fanning testified before the House Armed Services Personnel Committee, and the head of that subcommittee is Jackie Speier from California. But
yes,
the thing of it is, what was the object of this hearing? Because the point is, of course, Elaine, what you just said a few minutes ago, that if the Congress should pass some legislation codifying that the military must accept transgenders, the presidential, I don't know what would happen in the courts on that. We can only guess, given that there are so many bad appointees in the courts. But what was the purpose of that particular hearing?
Well, actually, they issued a statement, and it was coordinated by the Palm Center, which is an academic LGBT activist group that is based in San Francisco. The witnesses at the hearing were military personnel or former military personnel who testified about their own experiences. There was one official there, though, representing the Department of Defense, James N. Stewart, and he did a pretty good job. He explained what the Mattis, what the Trump-Mattis policy was all about. Of course, he was faced with hostility from the chairman of that subcommittee, Jackie Speier, but he held his own. From what I haven't seen the video yet, but I was told that he did a pretty good job, and that's encouraging. But we've also asked the ranking member of that committee and members of it to say, how about some balance here? How about bringing in independent witnesses who have firsthand experiences with this policy and why it is a problem? This would include medical personnel who were told and directed, you will teach people something that you know is not true, that gender can change based on changes in physical appearance or hormones or surgery. These medical personnel know that is dishonest. And some of them wrote to me and they said, you know, I'm going to have to disobey an order if this continues because I cannot be dishonest and teach people things that I know are not true. We need to hear from people like that. We need to hear from families whose young people in the military got the transgender training, who started to have doubts about gender identity, who started leaving and separating from their family, even getting divorces so that they could achieve from the Department of Defense, get medical care to transition to the opposite sex. These stories are heartbreaking. But you didn't hear any of that at the hearing that took place on February 27. Elections have consequences.
Yeah.
So there is a Democrat in charge of that subcommittee now, and that's the way it's going to be for a while.
Elaine, we only have about a minute and a half left, but and so this is a hard question, but the Pentagon, as you and I both know, has been infested by Obama thinking people, appointees. The military really went through a horrible transformation during his presidency. So what's remaining there? Is there any signs of any of that getting cleaned out?
Well, as I say, when there was an Obama holdover in charge of the panel of experts that looked at this transgender policy, and I had very low expectations that anything good would come out of that. Surprisingly, something good did come of that. Robert Wilkie, who heads the Veterans Administration now, for a while was in charge of personnel and readiness in the Pentagon. Since he has gone, though, he's not been replaced. So, yes, there still are too many Obama holdovers in the Pentagon. I think Secretary Mattis, you could praise him for a lot of things and fault him for some things, but one of the biggest mistakes he made was not in putting someone solid in that position before he left the Pentagon. So it's an ongoing battle. It's hard to deal with Pentagon officials. That's why people should be in touch with the White House, send messages in support of the policy, let their members of Congress know this is an ongoing battle, and you can't just stand pat. Even if you win one battle, you know the war is not over.
Yes, no, never is. Okay, Elaine Donnelly, Center for Military Readiness. And by the way, this is what Elaine does. She fights this stuff, and she brings this stuff to the attention of the American people and to the administration. Center for Military Readiness is a great outlet for information about this, so I highly commend Elaine and the work that she does. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.